Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Extra Inch Podcast. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hey, mate.
Or the Clarkster, as we call him. Clarky Boots. I don't know why I said that.
You call me much meaner things when we're off air, Chris.
That's probably true. There's no Bardi today, although you'll hear him a bit later because he's recorded a special segment. He couldn't be with us tonight, he's busy. But Nathan and I thought it would be a good idea to get together and talk Spurs pre-season and transfers anyway. So let's start with pre-season. We're Audi Cup champions. How does that feel, Nath?
Mate, we cannot be stopped. We are the monsters of pre-season. They're real trophies as far as I'm concerned. So
the trophy is pretty smart as well. It's like legit a nice trophy.
What is it? Is it? It's like it's reminiscent of like the old UEFA Cup or something. It's
quite... Yeah, I think so. And the players seem to like genuinely take it really seriously when they were like throwing it around.
No, I think they were like they were playing into it for fun. I think.
Do you think
they were leaning into the joke of it?
I do love the image of all of our kind of homegrown academy players lined up, thanking the fans. That was was touching. That was very touching. So, you know, we've had a few matches since we last spoke, but let's focus on the Audi Cup games because they're fresh in our minds. Was there anything of interest going on there for you?
So I thought we would line up in a diamond, having played the first two games in a diamond and finally did a lineup predictor thing. And then we played a 4-2-3-1, which I guess is fairly interesting that, you know, there's at least, I was really getting the impression that we were just, okay, we're just playing diamond all season now. So that suggests that there's going to be more flexibility and more experimentation. It was nice to see Eriksen on the left of a 4-2-3-1 because we don't get to see him play there much anymore. He gets put on the right, which I like less for him. That may be completely irrelevant if he leaves, so never mind. But there's just not any sort of huge tactical ideas being thrown out there. We saw I think we saw like Lamella and Dele and Lucas all take a turn up front just to see how that worked for them. But yeah, all fairly standard stuff that you expect under Pochettino tactically.
I also enjoyed seeing Eriksen on the left. I wrote about him recently, about his transition through different roles at Spurs and how he's kind of most recently come to be part of a midfield three. And I think that has an impact. Well, of course it has an impact on his ability to create and score goals. So if he were to stay and play on the left or the right in a 4-2-3-1, I'd be pretty happy with that. And I feel like he'd contribute a lot more in that sense. And of course, the arrival of Tongi allows that to happen because he's very adept at playing in 4-2-3-1. He played that in that role plenty last season. And I thought he looked great. I thought he looked really comfortable in the role. What did you make of his performance?
Yeah, so he was sort of... his very first touch of the club, as we touched on before, was an interception followed by an assist. And that was obviously lovely. And then he was sort of a bit quiet. I didn't want to like comment on that or mention that because there's no need to start like pushing back against this brilliant new player we signed. But that was in my mind. But now he's sort of grown into it through pre-season and had a strong game against Real. Yeah, I'm getting them all confused. It all blurs together. It's good to see him sort of grow into it. And Pochettino has been quite clear that he's going to take a little while to bed in, hence him not appearing in the second game against Bayern at all, because it's about slowly getting him up to speed, both physically and with the system and how everything is played.
Sure, and to follow that, we had a question from Nathan Phillips, who is at Nathan D. Phillips, so I feel like he's trying to steal your thunder there already with the Twitter at. He says, will Winks be more of a traditional holding midfielder this season, allowing Tongi to surge forward, Or will it be more like the Benteleb-Mason double pivot, where Mason played a bit further up than Nabil, but neither were traditional holding midfielders? And if you don't mind me just jumping in first, I very much see Winks as transitioning to a pure six role this year. I think he's kind of been heading that way anyway, and in pre-season we've seen a lot more of that. And for my money, he does a really good job of screening these days. Around 9 months ago, I was quite critical of his lack of a defensive awareness. And I thought Winks was quite often letting players run off his shoulder. And I'm pleased to say that as he's got fitter and more confident in his position, that's largely been cut out of his game. I've been very impressed with what he's been doing defensively. He's not like a traditional all guns blazing, tackling, intercepting defensive midfielder, but he's a screening player who, a bit like Eric Dyer, can shuttle players into the right areas of the pitch to then close out attacks. And I think he's growing in that area and is already, of course, a very competent sort of deep line playmaker. How do you see those two working together, or will it be those two? What do you think?
Yeah, essentially, regardless of whether we play a two or three man midfield, it seems like Winks will play as the number six in that sort of Busquets, Jorginho, Paredes, Weigl kind of role, and Ndombele will be the deepest eight. Even if there's only one eight, he'll be the defensively focused number eight, if that makes sense, a box-to-box player. So I don't think the formation will have much an effect on what will be their typical roles most matches. Winks has been making this move for a couple of seasons. It does make a fair bit of sense for him, because I think that the lack of time on the ball when you play further up the pitch doesn't do him a lot of good, whereas his ability on the ball in the first phase of possession, that's where he's strongest. That's his best attribute. He does still need to make some improvements defensively, both in terms of just sort of the sensible positioning things, but also getting stuck in a little bit as well. But I think that he can continue to improve there, and he's got the right coach for that kind of stuff.
Sure. And I think it makes sense for Winks. He kind of had to either improve his attacking output or his defensive output.
Yeah.
Either way. And he's focused on defence, and I think that makes sense for him. I said on Twitter the other day that possession is a form of defence, and Winks is one of our best possession players. So I think there's something to be said there. I'm just pleased to see him growing year by year as a player, to be honest. And I've been very impressed with him in pre-season. I think he's kind of hit the ground running. And there are other players as well who I've been equally impressed with. Lamella, who, as we know, loves pre-season, I think has looked very sharp. Not always successfully so, particularly against Bayern, but very, very sharp, certainly into the tackle. Nice, quick, crisp passing. Impressed with him. Ndombele, as we've mentioned. But also, I think Son has looked very lively and confident. And that is a good sign, because he ended the season pretty poorly. So to see him kind of get back to something like his best, most confident form is really pleasing. And Oliver Skip, I think, has looked incredibly bright as well. He's someone who kind of looked at the end of last season like he was starting to show signs of becoming a genuine squad option. And I think that's certainly the case in pre-season. What have you made? And who else has caught your eye?
No, I think those are all very good shouts there. So Skip really impressed me against Juventus. But there's been he has still continued with that. Yeah, he seems very mature for being such a young player. There's definitely a maturity to his play. When we had major midfield issues at the end of last season, I was hoping that he would at least see some pitch time in all of that. And was a little disappointed he didn't. But hopefully, based on this pre-season, because I do think that we are still short in midfield. You know, even with Ndombele coming in, even with Winks sort of permanently taking up the number six role, I think we're still a little light just on bodies. So I would hope that Skip can be brought through. And I think he'll probably mix up his roles a little bit based on wherever he's needed. And that should be good for him. I think you said all of the... outside of the young players, I think you've if we're counting Skip as part of the first team now, I think those are the standout first team players.
So let's talk about those young players. We had a question from Sam Ricketts, who says, realistically, which youth players do you think could have an impact on the main squad / starting 11 this season? So, I mean, let's first talk about the ones that have caught your eye the most, because I think that question sort of assumes that they'll automatically be kept in the first team squad, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. But who's caught your eye? Who do you like the look of? And then we'll move on to talk about who might then get some games for the first team.
Well, there's two players really, and they are Troy Parrott, who everyone's very excited by. And then there's Tanganga, which there's also a lot of excitement for him. I'm a tiny bit less excited about Tanganga than I am about Parrott, but there's still obviously plenty of time for both of them, not necessarily this season. I mean, Parrott just looks brilliant on the ball. He looks like a very rounded player. He's 18, is that right?
17.
He's only 17. He's a little boy. You really don't want to make the comparison for obvious reasons, but the roundedness to his game and the fact that he is on the tall side, especially for 17, and he's not slow despite it. He's a little bit like Kane, isn't he?
He really is. I mean, they are twins stylistically. They really are. And who better could he have to learn from? That's the thing. And I'm caught in two minds with Parrott, because part of me desperately wants him to go out on loan and play a full season and bang in some goals for a League One club, because I think long term that would help him. But then you sort of imagine him being in training with Harry Kane every day, watching him very closely, learning from everything he does on and off the pitch. And that sounds just as exciting. And, you know, frankly, if we don't sign Fernando Llorente back, we'll need Parrott. You know, he'll get minutes, he'll get games. I'm totally torn on what way we go with him. But yeah, his performances were very exciting. Very, very exciting. I thought he did great. I thought he would do well, but he did he exceeded expectations. And like you say, Tanganga, he always has been just a very solid, dependable defender. The thing that's impressed me with him is his composure on the ball, because that was always the thing that was slightly lacking for him. And, you know, it develops at different times for defenders. He's never been terrible on the ball, but his passing was never that great, and it looked good. He made some really nice passes, particularly out to the flanks. Nothing too risky, all fairly basic, but he was, you know, he's getting the ball forward quickly and not afraid to pass sort of 15, 20 yards, and that was good. I loved him in the under-18s, and I've mentioned many times before that I have a problem with the way that some of our youngsters stagnate when they get to the under-23s, and he was certainly one of those. So he got overtaken by TJ Ayoma, who Pochettino included in pre-season last year. Of course, this year, Ayoma's been injured, which has opened the door for Tanganga to come back, and obviously he's benefited from that, and that's a great thing. Now, he is one that I want to see go on loan, because there's no way he's getting games other than, like, maybe two cup games if we draw an easy team in the League Cup. So he needs to be out on loan. I would say he could easily get into a League One side and possibly into a lower Championship side pretty much immediately. So whichever one of those wants to play him 46 times next season, I'm all for that. Which other youngsters caught your eye, if any?
Obviously, I'm very reluctant to criticise players. I am going to mention in negative light one, but that's because it comes with a big asterisk. So I wanted to see more from Rolls. I was a little disappointed that he didn't sort of shine much. And my disappointment is based on the belief that he will eventually, that he will get, you know, maybe next preseason or maybe in a cup game sometime soon. I think that there's a lot of talent with him, and I think there's reason for excitement around him. And he looked sort of a bit off the pace this preseason, and that's fine. You know, that's forgivable, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's a completely fair assessment. The one thing I would say is he stepped up to take that fifth penalty, which was classic Jack Rolls. He has a lot of confidence. He's a very ballsy player. He's got quite a lot of spike to his game, which I think people will like. He's quite a spiky character, and that penalty kind of summed him up, and it was great. And Pochettino's little nod to him afterwards also great.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that whole thing. So really, really pleased that he took the penalty, because at least he had something. You know, he kind of got noted for something in preseason, which I felt he needed. And again, he needs a loan. He needs to go out and play. He needs to be playing 20, 30 games this season for I don't know, League One, Championship club, and we go from there. And so the other players that were involved, we had Harvey White, who's a midfielder who played at left back, and I thought did very adequately at left back. He's got a good left foot, so that's why he kind of got stuck out there. But really, he's a midfielder. He started as a 10, and he now plays mainly as a holding player. But he's very competent. He's 17, so I'm sure he'll have a whole season in the under-23s. We saw glimpses of George Marsh, who I'm not the biggest fan of, but, you know, he did fine at right back, broadly. And we saw quite a lot of Anthony Georgiou, who is now 22, so he's the same age as Kyle Walker-Peters, and Luke Amos, and Josh Onuma. And I think Georgiou, who had a full season out on loan at Levante's B team last year, he needs to either leave permanently this summer or to get a loan to a kind of League One or Championship team if he can. I don't think Georgiou's a Spurs quality player, but of course very happy to see young players get minutes, and you know, he was doing us a favour by filling in at left back. He's really not a left back, so it was great that we had someone who could fit in there and not be a complete disaster. Let's talk a bit about Juan Foyth, because he got what looked to me like quite a bad injury, and there was a lot of talk about Foyth because essentially he's one of three right back options, but people are talking about him as maybe our preferred right back choice. What did you make of the injury, Nathan? And we had a question from John Steggles. He says, do we need right back as Foyth was injured by Sanchez in retaliation for the common tackle?
I thought we needed a right back already, regardless. I've been quite vocal about that. I do think Foyth had a decent showing. You know, I don't think he's a terrible right back by any means. You know, he's not, I don't think he'd be a disaster. I just think that, like, look at the quality across the rest of the 11. Look at the historic issues we've had at right back. Look at his potential ability as a centre back, where I think he should be getting minutes. Let's not piss about. But, you know, yes, I think, we don't know how bad the injury is, but he had to be stretchered off, which is never a good sign. It looks pretty bad. And, you know, obviously you are arriving in that situation for terrible reasons, but I would hope that that should push the club on to go after a first 11 quality right back, because what was already a disaster, I think, in the right back zone has got even worse.
And it leaves a decision to make with Aurier as well, with days left in the transfer window. The rumours were that he was available for transfer if a club were to be interested in him. If he doesn't go, then I guess we have to play him. God, it's just, I don't even want to think about it. It's quite depressing. I thought Walker Peters, actually, in his last game where he played the first half against Bayern, I thought he did a good job. He put in a really great cross early on, and that seemed to boost his confidence. And he was quite assertive defensively, which I enjoyed. And I think that's something that's been lacking in some of his performances previously for our first team. Compared to where I'd seen him in the under-18s and 23s, where he literally just dominated wingers because he was so much better than them. I hadn't seen that from him in the first team, and so I was quite pleased to see him be a little bit more assertive. I really hope that if Foyth's out, that Walker Peters, and we don't sign, you know, anyone else, I really hope that Walker Peters gets a run and establishes himself. But at this point, I just don't know whether Poch trusts him, and you know, if we're thinking that, then he's probably thinking that as well. And that's not a great situation for him to be in. Let's talk a bit more about transfers then. We've been linked heavily throughout the whole window with Giovanni Lo Celso, and at the start of the window and at the end of the window with Bruno Fernandes. I don't know a lot about Fernandes, so I'm going to be reliant on you here, Nathan, but we've had lots of questions about both of these players. But we'll go with the one from Mall T, who is at Combolgui, I think. He said, which would fit better as a replacement for Eriksen, Lo Celso or Fernandes? So, shoot, Nathan, what do you think?
So, they are both quite like Eriksen in the fact that they're both playmakers, right? They both have a similar role. They're also both like him in that they sort of straddle the line between playing as a number 8 and playing as a number 10, which is something that Eriksen does a lot for us. I think they've arrived at it from different angles. So Lo Celso has spent most of his career playing as a central midfielder, and this last season has moved up front for Betis, where he scored a bunch of goals. And Fernandes, he's really, most of the time in number 10, but he's been playing as a number 8 simply to get him on the ball earlier in possession, right? I think that probably Lo Celso, for those reasons, makes more sense for us because we want someone who can play deep as well as playing further up the pitch. I don't think we could expect Fernandes to play as an 8 for us, really. It's hard to sort of, you know, rate them off against one another because they're playing in different leagues and you never know how they'll adapt. And it's easy, you know, I could say one now and then 5 years time that might be ridiculous because, you know, things change. Certainly, Fernandes is doing more in Portugal than Lo Celso is doing in Spain, but that's, you know, you don't know how to weight that. They're both definitely very good options, although my preferred option would be to sign Eriksen to a new contract.
Sure. Putting you on the spot somewhat here, is there a player that you would liken Bruno Fernandes to who we might be more familiar with at the moment? Or is there no obvious comparison that you can think of?
I have thought of someone, but I'm reluctant to say it because people will get to... So, for me, he's a little bit like De Bruyne playing as a number eight.
Okay.
Because he's... Again, he's playing as number eight, but really he's being direct. He's getting the ball and he's making something happen. You know, he's making immediately. He's firing off that cross or he's playing that through ball. And he loses the ball a lot because of that, right? He takes risk after risk after risk because, hey, we're Sporting and, you know, we're in charge of this game. And I think that, you know, he would adapt that a little. I think if you look at his games in the Champions League, he did adapt his game a little bit to be a bit more safe, a bit more sensible. Please remain calm with the De Bruyne comparison because I'm not saying that he's at that level. I'm just saying he's approaching the game in a similar way.
Sure, no, I see that. So you basically it's kind of he's constantly got his head up and he's looking for runners and he's trying to make things happen. And
yeah.
And that sounds very Eriksson-y as well. You know,
yeah.
That's what Eriksson can be like when he's at his best. I think it's worth pointing out that Lo Celso is what 18 months younger than Fernandes, and that might be part of the reason why he seemed to be our first choice, just purely because there's more value there long term because you've got more years ahead of you with Lo Celso. I'm absolutely intrigued as to the way we've handled this transfer window, and I don't think we can sort of talk about it too much right now because there's still time to go. There's time to sort of rescue it and make it into a good transfer window. But I'm interested in your thoughts on why we've left it so late to get one of these players or any other players in. Is this purely Levy's bargaining tactic? We've spoken before about how Daniel Levy drives a hard bargain, and this is the case that he's waiting for the selling club to get a bit desperate, and then he can get a cheaper deal essentially. Or is he waiting for the selling club to secure a replacement, or to spend the money that might come from the potential transfer? Is he waiting for other things to fall into place, basically?
Yes, I think that definitely happens. I think Betis have been put into an awkward situation, but they're still holding up and they're not allowing themselves to be bullied so far, at least. So my understanding, and this isn't 100% reliable, is based on a bunch of things I've read from maybe not perfect sources, but they, as far as I know, bought him with the intention of selling him this summer with using his value as a player to launch their summer. So I believe he's signed to a special contract designed for him to be sold where he is paid low wages this summer, wages that Betis can afford this summer. And then if Betis turn down a deal exceeding a certain amount, I believe 60 million euros or something, then his wages are automatically dramatically increased to the ones he was on before under PSG, right? So clearly Spurs haven't triggered that increase yet. Otherwise, you know, it would all be kicking off. So, and Betis have gone out and they've bought Nabil Fekir, who is an outstanding player, but has like no knees. He's the Ledley king of attacking midfield. And they've bought elsewhere as well. They've invested quite heavily, but they haven't sold on the player who's meant to be funding that. So yeah, Levy is definitely trying to squeeze them into a difficult situation where they accept a lesser bid than they wanted to, but they haven't done so yet. We also have to understand that Eriksson is still at Spurs, so we also maybe don't know for sure that we need to replace him just yet. So, I mean, there's a huge number of factors. But I mean, fair play to Betis for standing up for so long.
And the other thing, I suppose, is that Wanyama and Dier are both still at Spurs as well. So our midfield, although it's not clogged in the best possible way, it's clogged. You know, there are a lot of bodies there, and they might not necessarily be the players we want to be rolling out week in, week out. But you know, if they're in the squad, they're going to have to play at some point. So you don't want to end up in a situation where you've got too many players, too many midfield players, to actually give them all games in rotation, because you just lose value and players get unhappy and disgruntled. Plus, of course, it's a hugely ridiculously inflated market, and I think we kind of all expected inflation this time round, but it's gone way beyond what I expected. I mean, Harry Maguire's gone for 90 million to Man United, which I just cannot quite get my head around. So, you know, Betis and Sporting both wanting big money just kind of fits in with what everyone else is doing and just makes sense. So, you know, good luck to Daniel Levy if he can force the price down to some degree and find some value in amongst this crazy market. But, you know, the downside to that, of course, is we've gone through pre-season. We've had the opportunity with the players in the training ground to implement tactics, styles, whatever, and we haven't got any new players other than Ndombele to do that with. And that is a big shame. And I'm sure Pochettino is not thrilled about that.
He doesn't seem to be. He seems to be angry, but he's maybe being dishonest. I mean, I don't know. We're just sort of reading into that baselessly, but there's definitely a frustration. Where that exactly that is coming from, we can't really claim.
His press conferences around preseason have been very unusual. Let's put it that way. He's not his usual friendly self, is he?
That's true.
Okay, we'll leave it there, Nathan. But we'll now hand over to Bardi, who's recorded a section on the rule changes that are coming in for this season, which I'm very much looking forward to listening to. So over to Bardi, and we'll speak to you soon.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, this season we'll see some major changes in place for the Premier League. And as we're the extra inch, and we're a nice kind of bunch of guys, and I honestly can't discuss any more ITK without going all Michael Douglas and falling down, we thought we'd give you a quick rundown of what's been changed and what this means for all of us. And who better to run you through the new rules than an Italian, someone whose DNA is set to always tweak and bend the rules as much as possible. So, brace yourselves. Here we go. Rule numero uno. In a blow to all proper football men, the drop ball is no more. Not that they're truly contested anyway at the top level. From now on, in a situation which calls for a drop ball, the football will simply be kicked back to the goalkeeper. This stops the old practice of kicking the ball into touch and forcing a team to take a throw in from a deep position. Number two, the wall. Attacking players are no longer allowed to get in the wall and cause confusion. They must be no more than 1 meter away. Otherwise, the defending team will get an indirect free kick. Also new, even though I had no idea this was a thing, when a defending team takes a free kick in their own penalty area, the ball is in play once the kick is taken. It no longer has to leave the penalty area before it can be played. Rule number three, goal kicks. This is the one which is making me a bit nervous. Hugo can now play the ball from a goal kick, and the defender no longer needs to wait for the ball to leave the area before touching it. This will probably see the end of the two centre-backs splitting and a central midfielder filling in. Hugo, Jan and Toby can now play 1-2s in the 6-yard box. Prepare yourselves for a lot of proper football men screaming, "Hoof it!" even more than last season. Rule numero quattro. Quick and easy. Players will get booked for taking off their shirts or going into the crowd to celebrate a goal, even if the goal ends up being disallowed. Personally, I'm looking forward to an opposition player scoring what they think is the winner or equaliser, only for VAR to pull it back, and then hopefully for them to pick up the second yellow card for an over-exuberant celebration. Rule number five, the handball rule. This is the complicated one, so bear with me. A free kick will be awarded if the ball goes into the goal after touching an attacking player's hand or arm, if a player gains control of the ball after it's touched their hand or arm, if the ball touches a player's hand or arm, which has made their body unnaturally bigger, or if the ball touches a player's hand or arm when it's above their shoulder. However, there are get-out clauses. It will not be a free kick if the ball comes off an opponent's body and hits his hand or arm. So, for example, Moussa Sissoko, Champions League final, not a penalty, but Spursy. See reference Spursy. It will also not be a free kick if the ball comes off an opponent's body and then bounces up and hits your player's hand or arm. It's not a free kick if the ball touches a player's hand or arm close to their body and they've not made it unnaturally bigger. And it's also not a free kick if a player is falling and the ball touches their hand or arm, or their hand or arm is between their body and the ground for support, for example, a sliding tackle. So a lot of this makes sense, but once again, there seems to be a lot open to interpretation, which means Windy will pretty much be saying handball, penalty to everything. Rule 6, we're getting there. Stay strong. Free kicks can now be taken quickly. Before, you had to wait for the referee to issue the card, but now the attacking team can just go for it and the referee can book the player later on in play. This applies to both red and yellow cards. Now we're going to smash through a few quick ones. Rule 7. If you win the toss, you can now decide which end to attack and whether or not you want to kick off. That's a big one. Rule number 8. There are now two types of breaks allowed in football. If it's hot, of course. Cooling breaks, anything from 90 seconds to 3 minutes. Or a drinks break, which is 1 minute. Rule number 9. Multicoloured patterned undershirts are allowed if they're the same colour as the sleeve of the main shirt. Thank God for that. Rule number 10. Team officials can now receive red and yellow cards from the referee if they've been behaving badly. Also, if the ref hears some abuse but doesn't know who said it, the most senior person in the dugout, of course normally the manager, will receive the punishment in their place. Now, back with one of the juicier rules. Number 11, penalties. The team's penalty taker is allowed to have quick treatment or assessment and then come back onto the field to take the penalty. Previously, this wasn't allowed. The game would have to continue without him. The goalkeeper must not be touching goalposts, crossbar or the net, and they must not be moving. The goalkeeper must have at least one part of his foot on the line when the kick is taken. He is also not allowed to stand behind the line. With VAR, I think this will be enforced heavily. Rule number 12. This is the last one on the list. Well done for sticking with me, and hopefully you haven't done what I do to Windy and speed this up times 10. Substitutions. To stop a manager pulling off a player furthest away from the dugout to waste time, players are now required to leave the field by the nearest point on the touchline or goal line. However, the referee can make the player run towards the dugout if he feels that it's unsafe for that player to exit the pitch anywhere else. Also, if they're injured, they can go the quickest way, I guess. Unless it's an Arsenal player, then just leave them there. Roll them off into the gutter and leave them there. Anyway, that's your 12 changes for this Premier League season.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, E. Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.